अजगोविन्दस्तोत्रम् वी हैव सीन द फर्स्ट थ्री श्लोकास् बुद्ध भजगोविंद ध्यान श्लोकम इत्सेल्फ एंड द सेकंड श्लोकम मूढ़जहि हिधनागम तृष्णाम एन नारी स्तन भरणाधिदेशम इन दीज थ्री श्लोकास Acharya is giving us the importance of putting dharma, artha, kama in their place. What dharma should be pursued? What is the most important dharma? What is our swadharma? What should be avoided in terms of the pursuit of dharma, how artha should be treated, how artha should be gained, how artha should be expended, how artha should not be pursued. Similarly, what is the pursuit of kama? What is the importance of brahmacharya? What is the importance of keeping Indriya Nigraha? What is the importance of mind control? And what will it eventually lead to? All that he has mentioned in the first three shlokas we have seen. Now in this shlokam, the fourth shlokam, Acharya is going to move into a more important and a more comprehensive view of life. And he is going to explain about life itself. What is the view of the Shastra about human life? So far, only individual purusharthas are taken. Now, entire life itself is taken up for study and analysis in this fourth shloka. So let us go through the shloka. Nalini dalagata jalamati taralam.
Nalini dalagata jalamati taralam.
Nalini dalagata jalamati taralam.
I told you, Sanskritam language, there is no la. La is not there. So it is Nalini Dalagata Jalamati Taralam. La is there in regional languages but not in Sanskrit. Nalini Dalagata Jalamati Taralam.
Nalini Dalagata Jalamati Taralam.
Nalini Dalagata Jalamati Taralam.
Tattva Jivita Marchaya Chapalam.
तद्वज्जीवितमतिशयचपलम्
विद्याद्यभिमानग्रस्तम्
विद्धिव्याजभिमानग्रस्तम्
विद्धिव्याजभिमानग्रस्तम्
विद्धिव्याजभिमानग्रस्तम् विद्धिव्याजभिमानग्रस्तम्
शोकः तञ्च समस्तम्
लोकं
शोकः तञ्च समस्तम्
लोकं शोकः तञ्च समस्तम् भज गोविन्दं भज गोविन्दं गोविन्दं भज मूढमते संप्राप्ते सन्निचेतनैरक्षदुग्रमकरगणे
नलिनी दल गत जलम अति तरलम तद्वत् जीवितम अतिशय चपलम दट इज द फर्स्ट लाइन नलिनी दल जलम नलिनी दल गत जलम अति तरलम व्हाट इज नलिनी दल गत जलम अति तरलम अति तरलम तरलम मीन्स हियर तरलम Saralam means very unstable. Very uncertain. Jalam, Saralam. Jalam is water. Water that is unstable and unsteady. What kind of a water example is Acharya giving? Nalini Dala Gatam. Nalini Dalam. Nalini is a lotus flower. So Nalini Dalam is the leaf of a lotus flower. So we all may have observed if there are dew drops or water on the lotus leaf, they are just precariously hanging on that lotus leaf.
Yeah.
We don't know when that water droplet will just slip off that leaf because there is no permanent support for that water droplet on the lotus leaf. They are just dancing there on the lotus leaf. Nalini dala gatam jalam atitaralam. Atitaralam is very, very unstable, unsteady. Tadvat means just like that. Jeevitam atishaya chapalam. Chapalam means, again, unsteady. Chapalyam means unsteadiness, fickleness. Atishaya chapalam, not just normal chapalam, normal unsteadiness. Atishaya chapalam, extremely unsteady. Extremely unstable. Extremely uncertain. Tadvat, just like that, jeevitam. He is talking about life. So, just like that, a human being's life is also very unstable, very unsteady, very uncertain. There is no guarantee of tomorrow to anyone's life. So, Nalini Dala Gata Jalam Atitaralam Bhavati Tadvate Jeevitamati Atishaya Chapalameva Bhavati. Chapalameva Bhavati. Atishaya Chapalam Eva Bhavati. So just like that, jivitam, life is also very, very unstable. Viddhi vyadhi abhimana grastam. Viddhi means know it. Viddhi vyadhi abhimana grastam. So in reality, what is this life? Life is abhimana vyadhi grastam. Vyadhi Abhimana Grastam. So, Grastam means one that is afflicted by. One that is afflicted by. Or one that is remained in. One that is a bundle of. So, one that is afflicted by two things, Vyadhi and Abhimanam. Vyadhi is disease. Abhimanam is ego. One that is afflicted by disease and ego. Vidhi vyadhyabhimana grastam. Lokam shokahatancha samastam. Samastam lokam, the entire creation, entire world, shokahatam. Shokam, shokahatancha samastam lokam. Shokahatam. Hatam means one that has been injured, one that has been hurt. One that has been inflicted with a wound, that is hatam. Shoka hatam is one that is inflicted with the wound of shokam, always being in sorrow. That is the nature of this world. That is the word to word meaning of this shloka. So, what is the explanation of this sloka? Why is Acharya now talking about life itself? Because in the first three shlokas, he talked about the four purusharthas of life, out of which he talked deeply about the three purusharthas and mentioned the importance of the fourth purusharthas. So he spoke about dharma, artha, kama, and spoke about also the importance of moksha. When did he talk about the importance of moksha? In the very first shloka.
Nahi
nahi rakshati dukram karane samprapte sannihite kale. So that nahi nahi rakshati, when he talked about, that implication was about the fourth purushartha, that is moksha. So life is nothing but the pursuit of these four purusharthas. Anybody's life, whether somebody is one who is in a Vaidika margam or a Vaidika margam or Indian custom follower, non-Indian custom follower, it doesn't matter. Anybody's life is only a collection of these four purusharthas: dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. For 99% of the population of this world, only two purusharthas, artha and kama, earn money and enjoy. So that is those are the two purusharthas. And above those two purusharthas, if somebody is having a good heart, one is a noble person, and he wants to do some good to the society, then he will also look at the dharma purushartha. So artha kama, then dharma purushartha is added. And only those people who actually have the qualification and the interest and the knowledge of something above dharma purushartha, they go for the moksha purushartha. So dharma stops at one point. Then after that, it is only the pursuit of moksha, which is the highest. So, to look at all these purusharthas together, now Acharya is talking about life in general. What is the real nature of life? So, the real nature of life he is talking about here is that life is full of uncertainties. We all know that. But we do not accept it. We do not acknowledge it. We do not accept it. And we think that life is going to be permanent. We live our life as if life is going to be permanent. Why? Because we are so attached to this limited entity called the physical body and ourselves, so surrounded in the desire-centric world, the world that is centered around money and desires, the physical world, that is what we think life is. But that kind of life, Acharya says, is very, very uncertain, very, very riddled with uncertainty and instability. Not only that, he says, Vidhi Vyadhi Abhimana Grastam. If you distill everything in this life, there are only two things. One is comforts and the other one is sorrow. We have comforts and we have sorrow. We think that the comforts are happiness, the opposite of sorrow. And we think that happiness can be found in those comforts, whereas world can only give us comfort, not happiness. But sorrow is real. Why? Because that real happiness is not there in this human mind or this human body. So absence of real happiness is real sorrow. But we think that the comforts that are given by this world are happiness. So, we pursue those comforts all our life, mistaking them for happiness. But the reality is that it is riddled with lokam shokahatam cha samastam. It is riddled with shokam. Shokam means sorrow. So then what is the point that Acharya is trying to make? Okay, it is riddled with shokam. It is riddled with vyadhi and abhimanam. So it is chapalam, like a droplet on a lotus leaf. So what? So what is the lesson here? He says, do not afford to waste even a second in the pursuit of your highest goal. Know that any other pursuit that you are running after in this world is only temporary for the purpose of resolving that particular discomfort. But any pursuit that you make in this world cannot give you lasting happiness. So, what is the resolution Acharya is suggesting? That we will see in the coming, after talking about a little bit about the reality of the world. So essentially, Acharya is going to say, do not build that deep attachment with anything in this world. Just like how the water droplet on the lotus flower can be given as the example for life itself, the same example Bhagavan Krishna gives for a yogi in Bhagavad Gita. The same water droplet on a lotus leaf is the example given for one who is a mumukshu, one who is a jnani in Bhagavad Gita. The same example. But here, Acharya is giving it as an example for the fleeting in the nature of life. Whereas there, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives that same example as how the yogi will be detached from the world. Being in the world, how he can be detached from the world. He gives an example of the water droplet in the lotus leaf, or a lotus leaf immersed in the water. Either way is fine. When the lotus leaf is immersed in the water and taken out, not a single droplet clings to that leaf. If you put a sponge in the water and take out, it soaks up a liter of water. What is the difference between the lotus leaf and the sponge? The lotus leaf has a waxy coating on it, which protects itself even when it is immersed in the water. Whereas the sponge does not have any protective coating. Moreover, it has so many pores that it can suck water into. Similar is the difference in the minds of a yogi and a normal samsari. A yogi, although staying in this world, a jnani, a yogi, a sadhaka, staying in this world, he builds up this waxy coating called viveka and vairagya upon his mind, wherein they protect his mind from getting soaked too much into the chapalatvam of this world. Whereas a normal samsari, his mind is riddled with so many holes that anything that he gets involved into, he gets dragged into it. And he feels emotionally up and down and gets carried away by the waves of life. That is the difference between a yogi and a samsari. So, Acharya is saying, try to become that sadhaka who has developed through the power of his viveka and vairagya this wax coating around the mind that will protect him from the vagaries of the world. And for that, what do we need to do? Again, go back to sadhana. Moksha sadhana is the only way. You cannot afford to waste even 1 second. Why? Because life is so uncertain. We have a saying, right? Time and tide wait for no one. So the time never waits for anybody. If you say, let something wait for me to get to till tomorrow, who knows? Will you even be alive tomorrow or not? Nobody knows. Nobody can guarantee that I will be alive tomorrow. Not a single person can give that guarantee. When we cannot give such guarantee to life, Acharya is asking, why do you run around the simple pursuits of life that cannot give you lasting happiness and completely ignore the most important pursuit that is going to give you lasting happiness, that opportunity is not going to be available for you once you leave this life. Once you leave human life, that opportunity to even pursue that goal of moksha will never be there for you. Until, by God's grace, if you get another human janma after maybe 1,000 or million janmas later. So knowing the importance of human janma and knowing the futility or the temporal nature of human janma, why do you run around the comforts, confusing them to be happiness, and why do you disregard the ultimate pursuit called moksha? That is essentially Acharya's question in saying that this is the nature of life. So we have so many stories, so many subhashitas, so many shlokas that try to drive this point over and over and over. Any of our epics, if you take, so many shlokas are there, so many stories are there that show the evidence of this. Someone who has lived royally like an emperor, next day he becomes a pauper. He doesn't even have a single penny to fill his belly with, you know, to get even food. That is how Dharmaraja's life was. That is how Nala Chakravarti was. So many of them. Rama had to immediately leave the kingdom for 14 years. So many examples we get. It all there then depends on what your mindset is, what your mentality is, how an ordinary man takes the changes in life versus how a sadhaka takes and how a mahapurusha takes. In Ramacharitamanas, Tulsidas ji, he writes a beautiful shloka about how Rama, when he was asked the previous day that he is going to be anointed as the prince, crown prince of the country, and next day he was informed that he is going to be leaving to the forest for 14 years. And Tulsidas ji says, the smile never changed on Rama's face. It was the same smile when he was informed that he will be a crown prince, and it was also the same smile when he was informed that he should be leaving to the forest immediately next morning. That smile never changed. Why? Because his mind never changed. He kept his mind like the water droplet on a lotus leaf. He was not craving after being a crown prince, or he was not against going and living in a forest. Can there be any bigger discrimination or difference between somebody's life being the prince of the biggest kingdom versus going to a forest with bare feet? There cannot be a bigger difference, and Rama's life shows how one should be able to take it. And he showed the same equanimity when he got the kingdom back again and started ruling it. So that is the balance in personality that Rama has shown. Why? Because he knew the importance of what was the supreme goal of life. And how did he know the importance? When keeping aside the fact that he is an avatara of Bhagavan, the story that goes in Adhyatma Ramayana, not in Valmiki Ramayana, in Adhyatma Ramayana, the story goes that when Rama was a teenager, he was thinking a lot about these deepest questions of life. What is life? Who am I? Why did I come? What is my purpose? All these things he was so thinking so deeply. And then one day in the middle of the night, he leaves the royal palace and walks barefoot to the ashram of Vasishta. And he sits there and he is in deep thought about these things. And he knocks the door of Vasishta. And Vasishta says, "What is it? Why did you come in such a dangerous time, deep in the middle of the night? What is troubling you? What came into your mind that brought you here?" Then Rama asks all these questions to Vasishta, and that is when Vasishta he teaches Atmajnanam to Rama. And that entire teaching of Atmajnanam from Vasishta to Rama is called Yoga Vasishtam. So that Yoga Vasishtam is a very, very highly regarded book of Vedanta, highly regarded work of Vedanta. And that actually comes pretty advanced in the study of Vedanta. So in that, Rama asks so many questions to Vasishta about the nature of life, and Vasishta answers all these questions about the real nature of life. And educated by that instruction from his guru Vasishta in the Atmajnana, in the Brahmajnana, and he's not even ready for ruling the kingdom. He is just a pre-teenager or a teenager at that point, and that is when he develops that balance of mind, and that is going to help him through such difficulties in the rest of his life. So that is the real value of receiving the Vedanta Jnana, Vedanta Sadhana, and developing the right mental qualities. Before we go forward, any questions? Okay. So what Acharya is pointing out here is Tattva Jivitam Atishaya Chapalam. Atishaya Chapalam is the fickleness of life. The fickleness of life and the uselessness of all the attachments that we develop and the pursuits that we develop in our life, thinking that they are going to give us permanent happiness. So just one thing we need to remember, neither our Shastras nor our Vedanta, they say that anything in life is not of any use. They don't say that. They do not say that leave everything and go to the forest and meditate. They do not say that this householder life is useless. No Acharya says that. No scripture says that. No teaching says that. The only teaching that Acharyas give is know the place of everything in life and give it the appropriate importance. You are giving the topsy-turvy importance to everything right now. You are looking at everything upside down. You are giving the most importance to the things that should be given least importance, and you are giving least importance to the things that should be given most importance. Your vision only should be changed. You do not need to run away anywhere. You do not need to change anything in terms of where you are, the family, the society that you are in, the job that you are in, the place that you are in. Nothing needs to be changed. One thing that needs to be changed is your mindset. Your mindset needs to change. Then, no matter where you are, you will be able to appropriately handle life. We think that sannyasa means only sitting in the forest, maybe sitting in the ashram, but we again have so many examples of so many people who have achieved the highest brahmajnana being within the realms of the society. As many maharshis are there that are outside the society in secluded places, so many maharshis are there within the society also. It's a harder pursuit, definitely, but it should not be taken that one needs to leave everything in life to achieve Atmajnana. One needs to achieve mental sannyasa. That is what is most important. Because physical sannyasa, all everybody may be able to do it, may not be able to do it. But mental sannyasa is what is important in the sadhana. Once that mental sannyasa is achieved, that gives us that oily coating, the waxy coating that is required to happily float in the waters of life. Kshanam vittam, kshanam chittam, kshanam jivitam avayoho. Yamasya karuna nasti dharmasya tvaritagatihi. Yamasya karuna nasti. There is no karuna for Yama. He is called the stone-hearted person because his orders do not wait for anyone. One second we cannot gain beyond the allotted time. If the time has come, his Yamadutas will come and take away the life. So for him, there is no question of compassion, karuna. If he comes under the influence of karuna, he can never do his job. Because there is always somebody with a sob story. Somebody has this kind of story, that kind of story. Everybody has a story. Everybody wants more time. Everybody wants an extension. But Yama cannot give any of that. Because he is called Samavarti. He is the most righteous person in terms of doing his duty. So, it does not wait. So, when it does not wait, that is number one. And it does not give you prior intimation also. When something does not wait and something can just come suddenly without a prior intimation, what do we need to do? Anything, the most important, so we need to, if for example we are running out of time, we are running against a deadline, we are approaching a deadline in our project, and there are, say, 10 tasks pending in the project, and the deadline is tomorrow. What is the process to achieve those tasks? You prioritize those tasks and look at the most critical ones to meet when the deadline comes and leave off the least critical ones. That is a simple prioritization. But here, the trick is the deadline is not known. The deadline is not known. It could be next minute, it could be next week, it could be next month, next year, next decade, nobody knows. Not a single person knows. So if that is the case, then what should our approach be? Constant prioritization. Assume that the deadline is approaching. As approach, Yamasya Karuna Nasti Nitya Sannihito Mrityuhu. Assume that it is just around the corner and take care of the most important thing. But what do we do? Even though we know these things, we still worry about the least important and then run after them. What will happen if that money is not earned? Oh, what will happen to my family? What will happen to this? What will happen to that? What will happen to that? What will happen to your life if you lose your life that you have bought with millions of dollars of punyam? You have just wasted it. That punyam will never come back again to give you an opportunity to go to moksha. If you don't have millions of dollars in the bank, maybe your family, maybe they'll figure out a way. Maybe there will be so many other options. But once this $1 million punyam is lost, and you lost the opportunity to achieve moksha, then again, millions of janmas you are going to take to achieve that result. So if you do not understand the importance of it, that is why Acharya is giving the importance, saying, you have no idea how precious this human life is. Do not waste it. Do not waste a single second to pursue what is the most important goal of life. Okay, we don't know the most important goal of life. We only know how to make money, how to enjoy time with family, friends, having all these comforts. At least, are we doing those things effectively? You know, if I ask a question, what do you love the most in your life? Most of you say, you know, family. Family is the closest thing to me. I love my family the most. And if I ask the question, on a daily basis, how much time you are spending with the family very, very happily? The thing that you love the most in your life, the thing that you are working the most towards in your life, on a daily basis, how much enjoyable time you are spending with the thing that you love the most? Every single day, some issue or the other, some problem or the other, some argument or the other. Are you spending time in a really, truly happy way with the thing that you love the most and the thing that you are attached to the most in your life? Are you treating it so preciously? Are you treating it so delicately that not to hurt it, to enjoy it every single second of your life? No, you are not. You are subjecting the thing that you love the most to the same ups and downs of your mind, the minds of other people. So the combination of it is always creating conflict, always creating problems, always creating sorrow, always creating frustration. So the thing that you are imagining to be the biggest thing, the most precious thing in life, that itself is not giving you everlasting joy. Forget about everlasting joy. On a day-to-day basis, it is not giving you joy. Okay, forget about family. I love myself the most. I love myself the most. I don't care about the family. I don't care about friends. I don't care about anybody. I love myself the most. I want to be happy within myself. If you say that also, are you being happy within yourself? The question is, no, we are not. First, vidhi vyadhi abhimana grastam. First is, the vyadhi comes. So, some illness or the other, some problem or the other. This is not a well-oiled machine. As the days go by, some breakdown or the other is happening that is preventing you from enjoying your own body. Okay. Diseases are something that will come, those are natural to the human body. Fine, I have to deal with them. I'll take medicine or I'll do something, but somehow I'll be happy. I'll try to be happy. What about your mind? Are you able to keep your mind in a so happy state all the time, either about yourself or about others, the rest of the world? Are you able to? Absolutely not. And what is the biggest reason? The biggest reason is vidhi vyadhi abhimana grastam. This thing called ego is coming. This ego is there. Ego is I. Not arrogance, but the ego is I, abhimana. I, I-ness. And mine, mineness. That is called aham and mama. In Shastra, ahamta and mamata. Ahanta means the I-ness. Mamata means mine-ness. So these are the two biggest attractions in life, I and mind. So this I and mind is what causes raga and dvesha. Something that I or my mind likes is raga, happiness, and something that I and my mind don't like is dvesha, that is unhappiness or all the other negative qualities. And these raga dveshas, they give rise immediately to various different emotions: anger, frustration, depression, all the other negative qualities that we have. All those things come out of one single quality called ego, I, aham, and mapa. So within yourself, are you able to keep yourself happy? You are not able to. You are thinking of somebody. Why did that person have to say this? Why did that person have to do that? I don't like that person. I don't like him doing that. Why is he not listening to me? Why is she not listening to me? Why should I listen to her? So many things the mind is thinking about, creating all these emotional disturbances. So body-wise, it is not lasting happiness. Abhimanam, mind-wise, it is not lasting happiness. And if you go beyond the body and mind, the closest circle you have, family-wise, friends-wise, colleagues-wise, society-wise, nowhere you are able to see real happiness. If some specks of happiness you are trying to scrape out here and there in a sea of sorrow. In a sea of sorrow. Why? Because it is because of our false imagination that life is happy and dependable. Because of that false imagination that life is happy and dependable, we are not able to come out of and think or see the reality of life. The reality of life we are not able to see because we are allowing ourselves to be sucked into this magic illusion called Maya.
But that is not in our hands, Vandikala. That is not in our hands, right? We are sucked into by this Maya.
That is in because if it is not in our hands, then there is no meaning of sadhana. There is no meaning of achieving anything, and there will not be examples of all these people who have strived and achieved Atmajnanam. Either Atmajnanam is there or not there. It is not in our hands. But Krishna and all the other Acharyas and all the Vedas, all the Vedantam, all the Shastras, Puranas, everything says it is in your hands. It is in your mind. Your mind can be changed by you. Your behavior can be changed by you. Your attitude can be changed by you.
But I am not my mind, right? I am not my mind. I am not my body.
If you know that you are not your body, then you have no problem at all. Then don't worry about anything that is related to you or your mind or your body. You are already happy. If you have already realized that you are not your body, you are not your mind, you are a Brahmajnani. There is absolutely no need to worry. Because we all identify ourselves with the mind and the body and attach ourselves to the things that are related to this body and mind, the problem comes. If you say, I am not my mind, I am not my body, from tomorrow anything happening to this body, anything happening to anything that is related to this body, don't get bothered. Anything happening in this mind, don't get bothered. If you train yourself like that, eventually you will know how to separate yourself from the mind and the body, and eventually you will receive Atmajnana. You will be able to very easily receive Atmajnana. So if once you have decided that I am not my body, then that this body is not me. So anything happening to this body, I am not worthy. Anything not happening to this body, I am not worried. A disease comes to this body, I am not worried. Anything happening to something related to this body, I am not worried. My wife is related to only this body, not me. My kids are related to only this body, not me. Friends are related to only this body, not me. Society, job, colleagues, everything is related to only this body. Once this body falls, that's it. Everything is over. So anything happening to any of these entities, don't be worried. If you are not worried about any of these things, then you are floating. Floating like a water droplet on the lotus feet. But you are saying on the one hand, I am not my body. But on the other hand, you are doing everything possible to be sucked into this vortex of the things that are related to this mind and body. Those things, the fact that I am not my mind, I am not the body, is just academic knowledge for us. It is not a real knowledge that we have in ourselves. That real knowledge is called Atmajnanam. That is also called Pratyabhijna. In Shastra, it is called Pratyabhijna. So also called Atmajnanam. So once that jnana comes and sits, then you will be able to transact with this world like a real jnani. Until then, it is only just a bookish knowledge. The fact that I am not my body, I am not my mind is just a bookish knowledge. Until then, the taste of that real happiness is also bookish knowledge. We cannot understand what that real happiness is until we start doing the sadhana. No number of classes, no number of books, no number of lectures will give us the taste of that Atmajnanam unless we taste it ourselves. For tasting it ourselves, we have to take a step towards it. For taking a step, we have to make a determination. I do not accept the situation that I am in, this constant sorrowful situation. I know that I am entitled to eternal happiness. I will achieve it. I will achieve it and I will do the sadhana required. It is entirely in our hands only, nobody else's hands. We think that we are sucked in, but Shastra gives us so many examples of sadhakas who have pursued lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. If it takes multiple lifetimes, let it take. You all know the story of Nachiketas, right? From Kathopanishad. Do you know the story?
Yeah. You said one.
No. Yeah. So the story, Nachiketas was a small boy. And when his father did the yajna, he wanted to give away danam of one of his sons. And unfortunately, it was Nachiketa who was picked by his father. When Nachiketa said, "Who will you give it to? Whom will you give me to? Whom will you give me to?" The father got so annoyed and he said, "I will give you to Yama himself. Go from here." And that is it. One word from his father, he knew, okay, I have been given to Yama, and he goes straight to Yamadharmaraja's house. And he waits there for 7 days. And Yamadharmaraja wants to test him. And he comes back after 7 days and he says, "You are a small boy, what are you doing at my door?" Then he narrates the story and Yamadharmaraja is so happy. He says, "I will give you 3 boons. What are the boons you want?" Then he says, "I want to know the secret of life. I want to know the secret of life. So what is death? What is beyond death? How can I be beyond death? How can I achieve anything beyond death? How can I achieve permanent happiness?" All these questions he asks. And Yamadharmaraja tries to give him so many things. Just like how Bali Chakravarti gives to Vamana. He says, "I will give you so many palaces. I will give you millions of dollars. I will give you jewelry. I will give you houses. I will give you horses. I will give you elephants."
take all these and go and be happy. Why do you want to know about all these abstract things? Nachiketa does not budge at all. And he says, I have decided on this. If these things are so great, everybody would have pursued them, then there is no point of all these shastras saying Atmajnana is the greatest. I want that Atmajnana. Then finally, Yamadharmaraja becomes Nachiketa's guru and teaches him Atmajnana. And that is the content of Kathopanishad, the conversation between Nachiketa and Yamadharmaraja. So, age is not a barrier. No, gender is not a barrier. Society status is not a barrier. The only thing that is really required is that pure viveka, vairagya, dhriti. Dhriti is the determination, that absolute determination, that I am convinced that this is what it is, and I will achieve the sadhana chatushtaya sampatti. So for sadhana chatushtaya sampatti, it again go back to shama, dama, uparama, all those things, right? So to achieve, even before achieving all those things, the first thing that is required is shraddha. Shraddha means shastrasya guruvakyasya satya buddhya vadharana. Shastravakyam and Guruvakyam are satyam, 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 punasatyam. There is absolutely no doubt in my mind about the veracity of what the Guru is saying, what the Shastra is saying. Once you are 100% convinced, once you have that Shraddha, then nobody can shake it from you. Then you will, the real sadhana will start. Until then, it is only just academic interest, academic pursuit. Okay, somebody is saying, somebody is giving a lecture, some things are printed in the books. They, you know, we read it, we listen to it, just like anything else. But once that real Shraddha comes, then there is no waiting. Just like how Vivekananda, he got so right, once Ramakrishna Paramahamsa taught him what the real nature of Bhagavan is, that's it. He got transformed. Until then, he was a hardcore agnostic. He used to argue. He came, argued with Paramahamsa also. And one teaching of Paramahamsa, because he was of the highest caliber, one teaching of Paramahamsa, that's it. He got transformed. And he himself started propagating Vedanta all over the world. Why? That Shraddha was there, that Satya Buddhi. Shastram will not tell me anything else other than what is my welfare. So if Shastra says it, I will believe, I will pursue. So that Shraddha is there, then the strength to pursue it comes. Until then, it is just a floating idea, floating goal. So once that Shraddha comes and that Viveka and Vairagya, they grow and develop, then slowly they will start forming the required shield around the mind. Once that Viveka comes, once that Vairagya comes, things will stop bothering you. Things that used to bother us a lot previously will slowly bother us less and less and less and less and less until a point where things will stop bothering our mind at all. You all heard the saying that life is not what happens outside of. Life mostly is what is our reaction to what the things that happen around us. Life is not so much about what things are happening around us. Life is mostly our reactions towards what happens around us. What happens to our around us cannot be changed. They can hardly be changed because they are not in our control. Our reaction to what happens outside is 100% in our control. If we can handle our reactions, we can handle our life. And that reaction comes from our mentality, our attitude. If in our mentality, the goals are different, the ideas are different, the reactions will also be different. If something that is very, very, very trivial that is bothering you, you won't show a strong reaction to it. But if something is important that is bothering you, you'll show a strong reaction to it. But what if you can reprioritize that what was important until yesterday becomes very trivial today, then immediately the reaction will also change. Once I received the understanding from today, my highest priority is Atmajnana only. Rest of them are lowest priority. If you think that for something that is the lowest priority, you will not give a big reaction. If you don't give a big reaction, the mind will stay unagitated. If the mind stays unagitated, it has time to pursue sadhana. If it has time to pursue sadhana and interest to pursue sadhana, sadhana will continue. Sadhana continues, the qualifications will come. Qualification comes, eventually jnana will come. It all depends on our mental prioritization. In the mental prioritization, if you keep things that should not be prioritized on the top, your reactions will also follow. And life follows those reactions. If you have the proper prioritization of things, then appropriately the reactions will change and life also changes towards the better, towards the proper pursuit of sadhana chitta. So it all depends on one thing and one thing only, our sankalpa. Our sankalpa in terms of what is my priority in life, what is important to me, what is unimportant to me. That is why that manas. And in the last class I told you, the lower mind, the emotional mind, tries to jack everything here and there to unnecessary things. Our higher mind should be able to keep on watching it and controlling it, saying, don't go there, it's not important to you, don't go here, that is not a priority to you. Don't think about that, don't react to that, do not worry about that. All these things, who should be saying? Our own higher mind. Nobody else will come and say. Our own higher mind. And how do you build that higher mind? By constant
sadhana.
Sadhana. And what is that sadhana? Shravanam. First is Shravanam.
Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam.
Shravanam and Mananam first. Nididhyasana will come maybe later. Shravanam and Mananam. Constant Shravanam, constant Mananam. Why? Because if you hear once on a Wednesday night, you won't remember it. If you hear once on a Sunday afternoon, you won't remember it. That calm reinforcement has to be there. This is what is my goal. This is what is my priority. This is what is important to me. These are not important to me. That self-enforcement is what is needed. And then slowly, as we force that enforcement on the mind, it becomes a nature of the mind. And eventually we don't have to force it so much. It sort of implicitly understands. The mind itself understands. Okay, this is not important to me. I'm not going to be worrying about it. This is not important to me. I'm not going to get troubled about it. Then one will get to a point where one is like a Ramakrishna or a Ramana Maharshi or a Paramacharya or a Sringeri Acharya, where the body consciousness also is very limited. And that is when that unshakable joy comes into the mind, and what happens outside does not shake the mind. The mind just stays in that state of equilibrium, state of eternal happiness. So in essence, essentially, what Acharya is, understand the real nature of life and how you should transact within the other entities of life itself. What is the real nature of life? You must understand. If you want to give justification yourself that, okay, but this is the happiness I am deriving, that is the happiness I am deriving, then that means there is time and necessity for more reflection on the real nature of it. once you understand the real nature of the world and the entities in it, then that Viveka and Vairagya will slowly, slowly come. And for that, what is needed? More the Shravanam of the teachings of Acharyas who enforce that idea. If you keep on doing the Shravanam and Mananam of the things that attract you constantly, the mind is only after those. Sangat Sanjayate Kamaha. Once the Sangam happens in the mind, once the attachment happens once, the mind keeps on saying, go do that, go do that, go do that, again and again and again. So that Sangam itself needs to be watched. What attachment my mind is developing, that should be watched. If the constant attachment is towards the teachings of the Acharyas and towards the pursuit of the Sadhana Chitushte Sampatti, then the mind will turn. The mind will change. The attitude will change. Then, slowly the external things will stop impacting your mind, impacting or bothering your mind. That is the beginning of the building of Sadhana Chitushte. So, in this shloka, Acharya is giving an overall view of life, not just in terms of the four purusharthas, overall view of life, and what should be pursued, what should not be pursued. That ego and attachment, vidhi vyadhi abhimana grastam, that should be watched carefully. That vyadhi abhimanam, abhimanam of me, myself, and abhimanam can also mean unnecessary arrogance. What is there in this life that you own that you need to be arrogant about? So, lokam shokahatancha samastam. So, this way, now Acharya is teaching us what your priority should be, what your overall priority should be, what should be placed and pursued with urgency. What is the urgent priority in life? What are not the urgent priorities in life? So, with that, we will stop today's shloka. Next shloka, we will take up next. Any other questions?
Guru Garu, the same shloka, is there any other inner meaning which Acharya is trying to project, you know, from Vedanta perspective, like Jiva and Ishvara perspective?
Jiva and Ishvara perspective, yes. I mean, you can extrapolate and you can say that there is a Jiva and Ishvara perspective. Like if you think about the lotus leaf itself lives in water, and that water is Ishvara, and the lotus leaf that has born out of that water is the world itself, and the Jiva is within the world. And if he is clinging to that leaf, then he gets attracted to the leaf. If he is not clinging to that leaf, which is the world, then he will slide back into the vastness of the original water, which is Brahman. So if you don't cling to the leaf of the world, you will slide back into the original, real nature of Brahman, which is the vast water around that leaf. Is a very, very simple analogy, but it can also be analyzed a lot more in terms of sadhana. It can be analyzed in terms of yoga. It can be analyzed in terms of jiveshwara behedam. It can be analyzed. There's a lot of analysis that can be done for this Padmapatra Vivam particularly. When we talk about it in the Bhagavad Gita, we'll talk about it because it comes in Bhagavad Gita. When we talk about the meaning of Bhagavad Gita, we'll talk about it.
Okay, then.
Yeah. Okay. Is that it? Okay. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnam.
శాంతి 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 శ్రీ గురుభ్యో నమః హరి ఓం.